After weathering 2.5 years, give or take, of the COVID-19, it is time for a pandemic burnout reset. And so we ask, how can we reset our body from the great pandemic burnout?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned in to the 1316th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Kowloon who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, 2.5 years ago, give or take, we hunkered down to cope with a weaponized coronavirus that came to be called COVID-19. We masked up, pulled our children out of school, avoided shaking hands and giving hugs, ate home cooking, got vaccinated with experimental drugs, and to the extent possible, just hunkered down and avoided living it up. Then we tested positive and had to isolate in place until such time as we tested negative again. There has been a cost to pay for all of this hunkering down. Quite simply, we are as a community burned out from our hiding out. And it is time, don't you think, for all of us to do a big burnout reset. So let us begin today by saying hello to Dr. Greg Hammer, who is a Stanford professor of medicine and the author of Gain Without Pain. Dr. Hammer, welcome to the Food Chain.
Great to be with you, Michael.
Pleased to have you aboard. Now, I can't think of anyone who's probably more burned out than our nation's medical people, our doctors and our nurses and our emergency people. It just must be pretty bad for them. What do you see? Because that's what you look at a lot.
Absolutely. Well, I think that healthcare providers are affected quite variably, as folks are in the general population. Some of us are in hotbed areas where there's been really major breakouts, if you will, or COVID cases breaking out, and they've been flooded with managing COVID patients. Others have really not experienced that kind of heavy barrage with COVID directly. But I think we all, regardless of whether we're caring for many COVID patients or very few, are saddened and also stressed out, as folks are in the general population.
You advise a lot of doctors on tending to their burnout. How would you define burnout?
That's a great question, Michael. Burnout is a state of mental and physical exhaustion, which is caused by chronic stress. So we can talk about acute and chronic stress. The fact is that our bodies undergo a lot of physiologic changes when we're stressed, changes in hormone levels, changes in our cardiovascular state and otherwise. And our sleep certainly is negatively impacted by stress. And when we're fatigued, we tend to eat poorly. We tend to pick up sugary or fatty comfort foods, especially around the hospital. So our diet deteriorates, I would say. And third, our exercise habits also tend to deteriorate when we're too tired to exercise. So I think sleep, exercise, and nutrition constitute the tripod that supports our physical well-being. And when we're chronically stressed, they all suffer. And then, of course, we're in this self-propelling cycle of poor sleep, poor diet, not enough exercise, and things just keep rolling forward unless we're extremely intentional about redirecting that process.
And as we look back here at the last 2.5 years or so, we see a prolonged period of stress. I don't know. I don't care how you look at it. It's just been pretty stressful for most everybody. And probably some of us have not coped with that stress as well as we could have. In general terms, and when you're looking at the population, do you see the impact of that prolonged period of COVID stress that we've just been going through?
Absolutely, Michael. I think we all do. I think we'd have to have blinders on not to notice that so many of our friends, our colleagues, other people with whom we interact every day are really suffering from chronic stress. There are lots of reasons for that. First of all, life itself is stressful. The world does not comport to our wants and needs. And that itself generates stress. We focus on how we would like things to be, how we would like the world to take shape. And when it doesn't comport with our desires, we become unhappy, we become stressed. We resist the way the world is in many cases. And we could talk about how resistance versus acceptance plays into stress versus happiness. But absolutely, Michael, I think all of us have observed that those around us in all walks of life are experiencing excessive stress. I can't think of a time in my lifetime when we've had such a confluence of stressful events. I think certainly the pandemic itself, what's happening in Ukraine, the mass shootings that are going on in the United States every single day. I mean, I've read in the paper that we're close to 250 mass shootings this year, and it's just awful. You hear about it all the time, and we're so maxed out that we tend to depersonalize it.
Do you think those mass shootings are a manifestation of our stress?
I do. I think there are a number of causes, and stress certainly exacerbates the phenomenon, no question about it.
Well, like I said, 2.5 years of this, enough already. It's time for a reset. And when I looked at your bio, it seems like you offer practicing medical professionals the opportunity for a reset from their burnout. And you suggest that a good place to start is with your attitude. And you lay down four different elements of that attitude: gratitude, awareness, intention, non-judgment. But how can we begin this process of resetting with our changing of our attitude?
Yes, good question, Michael. First of all, we need to recognize that all 7 billion of us on the planet want the same thing. And it's quite simple. We all want happiness. The question then becomes, why are we not happier, and what can we do to become happier people? It's important to recognize that our brains have been hardwired through the course of evolution in two ways that interfere with our happiness. The first one is that we have a negativity bias. We tend to hold on to and remember the negative experiences we have and forget about the positive experiences. In my first book, I tell the story of my working with a resident in anesthesiology, a trainee, and we do four cases, difficult cases in the operating room on a particular day. She does an outstanding job. All four patients wake up in the recovery room. They're comfortable, so their pain is treated. They're all stable from a cardiac and blood pressure standpoint. Their breathing is stable. And the resident did everything so well, putting in all kinds of catheters and tubes and giving the right doses of medications. She missed one procedure. That is, she was trying to put a little catheter in an artery in a patient who was quite sick, and she couldn't get the catheter in, so I stepped in and did that one procedure. But she did lots of other procedures successfully and managed the patients really with expertise. So we debrief at the end of the day, and I give her an A for her performance during the day, and she goes home and has dinner with her husband, and as she's taking stock of her day and getting ready to go to sleep, does she think about all the things that went well, which were 99% of everything she did?
Of course not.
Exactly. She thinks of the one thing that she feels badly about, that she couldn't get that arterial catheter in and that Dr. Hammer had to come in and do that. That's what she focuses on. And to me, that's really an elegant and simple example of a negativity bias, that just this one thing that really had no adverse consequences was in the realm of a negative experience. And there were perhaps 50 other things that she did well that she could have focused on before she went to sleep, but her mind went to that one adverse experience. So we have a negativity bias. And the other way our brains are wired that interferes with our happiness is that we're very distracted, I would say even obsessed, with the past and the future. So we have a very difficult time experiencing the fullness of the present. And happiness lives in the present. So if we can't fully experience the present, we're not going to be happy. And those two things have become the way our brains work in their default mode. And therefore, if we're going to change those, and the good news is we have this property called neuroplasticity, we actually can rewire our brains if we're purposeful or intentional about it. But if we're not intentional, and intention is the I in gain, and I think all four of those aspects of the acronym, as you mentioned, gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment are equally important and interrelated. But when we talk about happiness, we really need to rewire our brains so that we focus more on the positive and we can focus more on the present moment.
So in other words, Doctor, our default position is to go looking for trouble, is to go find the negative.
And, exactly.
And that can be changed, but only if we change it.
That's right. Because I think, you know, we could explain why is it that throughout evolution, our brains have evolved to be the way they are, to have these two properties of the negativity bias and distraction or obsession with the past and the future. I think we can postulate as, you know, perhaps early Homo sapiens sitting in their cave by a fire 50,000 years ago, had to be concerned about the possibility that there was a saber-toothed tiger lurking at the mouth of the cave. And it was actually an evolutionary advantage to be always on the lookout for trouble, always on the lookout for what's the worst possible thing that can happen. In other words, catastrophizing. And if one catastrophized and therefore precluded those bad things from happening, one lived a longer life and had more offspring, and so perhaps the genes related to that
passed right along. We're going to have to take a quick break, Dr. Hammer. When we come back, I'd like to pick that up and see and talk about how we can use that to overcome that. Use that basic fear that we need to survive to overcome that basic fear and see things in a little bit brighter way. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What with Dr. Greg Hammer. Today we're talking about the great reset we're going to do from all of this COVID pandemic burnout business that we're in. Right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour. Today we're talking about resetting. And how do we go about resetting when our basic inclination is to look for trouble, is to see the kind of the dark side of things, to see that saber-toothed tiger that's sitting at the entrance to our cave and worry about it. Where do we start? How do we start to overcome that natural inclination to go look and find the bad things? Dr. Hammer?
Michael, the way we learn, and as a longtime educator, what appears to be clear to me is that we learn by taking baby steps. So we learn by absorbing small amounts of new information, perhaps on a daily basis, and also we learn through repetition. So if you're wanting to learn, whether it's something mental or something physical, you want to learn a new dance step, for example. You do it a lot of times, and you don't try to memorize 20 steps at the same time. You perhaps focus on two or three, and you repeat those. And when you got that down, you move on. So we got to get the ball rolling in the right direction slowly, but it's the fact that we learn through repetition. So how do we take small steps? And this is why I have promoted the GAIN meditation that I teach and I practice myself, and it can be done in as little as 3 minutes. So we have to, first of all, be intentional about rewiring our brains, intentional about committing 3 to 5 minutes every morning, again, repetition and baby steps. And we start with a GAIN meditation. And, you know, Michael, a lot of people feel that meditation is something that requires a half an hour or an hour, and we have to sit in a particular position, may or may not be particularly comfortable, and we're not allowed to move. And if we have thoughts streaming through our minds, we fail. And I don't believe that to be true at all. I think there are lots of different kinds of meditation. But with the GAIN method, I give you 4 things on which to focus your thoughts. So I'm not asking you to banish all thoughts from your mind. I don't think that is practical. What I ask you to do is to sit in a comfortable place after you've awakened in the morning and done your morning hygiene. Find a comfortable place to sit for just 3 or 4 or 5 minutes. Start by closing your eyes and focusing on the breath. So focusing on the magic and the bliss of that air coming through your nose, filling your chest, and letting it go without any effort. Get into that for a few cycles, and then begin contemplating that for which you're grateful. And then we move from gratitude through acceptance, through intention, through non-judgment, return to the breath, and we slowly open our eyes and we're ready to go out in the world. So I think the answer to your question is the way we redirect the path of our lives is in baby steps with repetition and commitment to a daily practice.
And with that, we'd like to bring in the whole notion of physical exercise to go along with that, mental exercise too, because that mental exercise, That's serious business. That's the kind of serious business you really need to do to do a complete reset, correct?
Yes, but you know, it's serious business, I suppose. But on the other hand, I think there's humor in everything. And so when we are even taking baby steps and we stumble, we can laugh about it. So in a way, I think nothing is too serious for us, but you're exactly right about exercise. So as I said before, I think that sleep, exercise, and nutrition are very simply stated the 3 elements that form a tripod on which our physical well-being rests. Mm-hmm. And again, our default is perhaps not to have very good sleep hygiene, perhaps to have our laptop on our lap in bed and look at a screen before we go to sleep, or have that extra cup of coffee in the afternoon, or, you know, have a couple of glasses of wine at 7 o'clock. Things that definitely cause our sleep to diminish in quality. And similarly, we have to be intentional about exercising on a daily basis or almost a daily basis. And the same thing with our diet. You know, we have a lot of tempting, sweet, fatty foods, processed foods available to us all the time. So if we want to change the way that we eat and change the way that we sleep and exercise, we need to go back to that I in gain and be intentional or purposeful about it. The good news, again, is our brains are plastic. We have the ability to take control over the way we think and the way we behave and the way we eat, exercise, and sleep.
But only if we're very deliberate about doing that, because the default position of our brain is to head off in the wrong direction, go to the wrong side of town, is it not?
That's right. So, you know, I think when we do good things for ourselves, we get a little positive feedback. We get a little hit of dopamine or serotonin. And then, you know, a little light bulb goes off and say, wow, that was good. I should do that more often. And then we get committed to do it again. And pretty soon these positive habits become our routine way of living. And we feel better and better about ourselves. And I think, again, that can be a self-propagating course. And, you know, we need to hitch our cart to that horse going in the right direction.
So take us back to the doctor who made one wrong move and 99 good ones and focused on the one bad one. Now, she's laying in bed thinking about the one bad thing that she did, which is the default position of most everybody. I messed something up today. What should we do instead of that, focusing on that one thing that we did wrong?
First of all, we don't want to resist. We want to accept. So the A in gain is acceptance. And one thing we need to accept is our own mortality, our own fallibility, our own humanity, which is not perfect. So when we're having these negative thoughts, first of all, let's just relax and accept that we have negative thoughts. There's nothing wrong with having negative thoughts. So rather than push it away and try to bury it, which is a form of resistance, denying it, in fact, just notice it first. And again, this has to be intentional. We have to notice what are our thoughts doing? What are our actions all about? And when we notice that we're having these negative thoughts, when we're lying in bed or getting ready to bed, you go to bed, and we think of that one negative thing and forget all the positive things, the first thing is to notice that we're doing it and maybe have a little bit of a laugh over it, because in a way, it's kind of funny that we do that. And then once we notice that we're doing this negative thought pathway, we're getting on that negative thought pathway, say, well, let's just think about all the good things that happened today. So it's interesting with regard to our intention. I don't know whether you've heard of a program at Duke called Three Good Things, but what they've shown in tens of thousands of participants in their Three Good Things program is that simply thinking of three good things that happen during the day before we go to sleep makes us happier. Hmm. So, for example, tonight, maybe I'll start to think of something negative that happened. I'll notice that I'm doing it. And instead, I'll think of three good things that happened today. So I had a lovely patient this morning that was in a research project of mine. I interacted with all the nurses and other doctors. It was really uplifting. Two, I met Michael and we had this really uplifting conversation on his radio show. Three, I had a great meal. I got together with a loved one for dinner and we had a terrific meal. And I can include other things like that too. So when we notice that we're having a negative thought, and even if we're not, before we go to sleep, focus on three good things that happened during the day. And the Three Good Things study has shown that we will sleep better and we will become a happier person. Again, not overnight, baby steps repeated on a daily basis.
You know, something you said about acceptance that rekindled the thought of back when I was a college student and studying Aikido. And Aikido teaches that you meet force, not with force, but with acceptance. So if somebody comes at you and throws a big fist at you, instead of meeting that fist with, you know, a fist, and you have this clash of force, you gently accept the volition, and by accepting it, you can take control of it, and then just gently, gracefully turn it back on itself. And I always thought that was a great debate technique as well. Mm. And it seems like a great debate technique when you're having a debate with yourself over how you messed up. So maybe instead of meeting that objection with an objection and obsessing on it, you just accept it, as you say, and gently accept the consequence and okay, and just gracefully and gently turn it back on itself and move on to those three good thoughts that you owe yourself when it gets right down to it.
That's a beautiful analogy. And I think the world's great wisdoms, and I would think that Aikido, you know, the culture of Aikido, the teachings of Aikido are included. But if you think of all of the great wisdoms throughout history, these gain principles are recurring themes. And so acceptance, I think, is fundamental to the philosophy of Aikido. You're accepting that momentum of your opponent or somebody who's attacking you, and you're redirecting it. You're going with the flow, and there's acceptance in that and redirection. And, you know, I sometimes think of Jesus on the cross when I think of acceptance. There's a formula, first of all, Michael, in my book, which is that suffering equals pain times resistance. Mm. So pain in life is inevitable. Pain and joy are intrinsically part of life. But what we do with the pain will determine the extent to which we suffer. So if we try not to think about it, if we deny it, if we depersonalize others who are bringing us pain, those are all forms of resistance. And the more we resist the pain, the more we suffer. So, you know, back to Jesus on the cross, I see him with stakes through his hands and feet. He's bleeding. He's starving. He's, you know, just undergoing a tremendous amount of pain. But what made him who he was is that he lowered his resistance to the way the world was to zero. And suffering equals pain times resistance. If the resistance goes to zero, or the converse, if we fully accept rather than resist, our suffering will go to zero. And that's how I picture Jesus. I'm not a Christian, but I believe that he was an awake, enlightened human being, and I can imagine the pain he experienced, and yet he opened his heart and fully accepted the pain, and therefore did not suffer.
Excellent. And backing up a little bit and listening to you, you're a medical doctor. You work with children and their cardiovascular systems, and yet you seem to be a healer of the mind as much as you are of the body. How did you come to head off down that path, doctor?
Well, I think, when I was a child, I thought I might want to be an astronomer. So I had a couple of telescopes. I remember being out on the driveway of the family home in December outside of Chicago when the nights were clear and quite cold, often below zero, and gazing up at the sky through my telescope. And what occurred to me then, and even more so as I became a teenager and in my 20s, was how interrelated the universe is. And this is basic tenet of quantum theory, of quantum mechanics. And then I came to a fork in the road and when I was in undergrad, and I thought, well, should I go into astronomy or something else? And I had taken some biology courses, and it occurred to me that the body is sort of a model for the universe, that there is the very micro level subcellular component, and then there's the macro, which is the entire body, much like there's the subatomic particle, and on the other hand, the whole universe. And in both systems, everything is interrelated. And so this thirst I had for the connection between things in astronomy and biology, I'm a pragmatic person, and I thought, well, maybe medicine is the course I want to take, and I can further study human physiology and this amazing interrelationship of everything that comprises the body. And so that's why I decided to go into medicine. And I still have that same interest and that same curiosity.
It's kind of a situation where it's all connected. And perhaps there is a little bit of religion and faith in that statement. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dr. Greg Hamm, we're going to ask him how to go about exercising and feeding ourselves at the same time so that we can reset our bodies from this incredibly bizarre 2.5 year long pandemic burnout. Right back.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place aboard the USS Dale at Eniwetok, February 1944.
We got detached for some close-in shore bombardment on one of the little coral islands. From a distance, they're just little slivers of white and green separating the blue sea and sky. Somehow we found ourselves blasting away with our 5-inchers from one side of the island, while the big old battleships on the other side were booming away with their giant 16-inch rifles. Trouble was, the trajectory of their rounds was flat, so a bunch of those 16-inch shells hit that round slip of coral and ricocheted right off in our direction. You could hear them roaring past right over our head, and they didn't sound friendly at all. Captain said, "Let's get the hell out of here."
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. Talesfromatincan.com.
Come on, you watch the news. Be prepared to pay more taxes. Then if you owe back taxes or haven't filed in a few years, get ready. The IRS, the largest collection agency in the world, will be coming after you with the power to collect taxes by any means they want to. Hey, they can freeze your bank account, your passport, even padlock your business. Oh, good times. Look, if the IRS claims you owe them $5,000 or more in back taxes and they're coming after you, don't panic. Call my friends at Get a Tax Lawyer first. Their job is to negotiate with the IRS and save you money. They're experts at it. That's all they do. And you can trust them. In some cases, they have reduced a $50,000 tax bill to less than $1,000. If you owe the IRS $5,000 or more in back taxes, call now for a free consultation.
Call 800-661-5096. 800-661-5096. 800-661-5096. That's 800-661-5096.
Are you nearly maxed out on your credit cards? It doesn't matter if you're using your credit cards for fun or to survive. At the end of the month, your statements come in, and you can either pay them or you can't. If you can't, late fees and interest rates get tacked on, and now you're struggling just to make the minimum payment due. Do you feel trapped? Am I talking to you? Good, because I personally researched some companies that can help you. They may be able to reduce your credit card balances by 50% and stop the late fees. If you qualify, please call our special debt hotline number right now for a complimentary, free 5-minute consultation. Deal with your credit card problem now before it gets much worse and put more money back in your pocket. Trust me, I've been there too. Call right now.
800-370-8128. 800-370-8128. 800-370-8128. That's 800-370-8128.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, we are back. This is the Food Chain radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What with Dr. Greg Hammer. He's a Stanford professor of medicine. He is a physician. He is the author of Gain Without Pain. Gain without pain. What do you mean by gain, Dr. Hammer?
Well, I mean that we are always given the opportunity to better ourselves and to gain in that way. And I think three ways that I think of to live my life that I think are fundamental are self-growth, service to others, and being in a community. And I think if we can do those things, we will be happy. And as I said before, I think focusing on the present moment within those three domains will contribute to our happiness. So,
and there's no pain in it.
No, and you know, since I'm an anesthesiologist and I treat pain and I try to prevent pain, it's clear to me that we can gain, we can grow without pain. So, you know, it's not a difficult process. It's simply...
What was the formula again?
The suffering equals pain times resistance.
Yeah.
You know, I think is if we take baby steps, recognize that there's no such thing as failure, accept our fallibility. It's not failure. It's just being a human being. Then self-growth and serving others and being in community with loved ones and everyone, in fact, does not have to be painful at all. Quite the opposite.
But we do have to be deliberate about it, because the default position of our mind is to go looking for trouble. And so to avoid that, we have to take deliberate actions. One of them you suggest is to sit down and meditate, breathe deep, and relax. And then perhaps take that change of attitude into your exercises. What do you mean by relaxing into that exercise, Doctor?
Well, first of all, I think that moving our bodies is a source of great enjoyment and beauty. I mean, if you are paddling a canoe and you're on the river and you're surrounded by nature and beauty and you feel, you really bring your attention to the fullness of the present moment and you feel your arms working, paddling through the water and feeling the canoe propelled forward, maybe switching hands and paddling on the other side. And it becomes extremely enjoyable. I mean, it's poetic the way our bodies function. I would say the same thing for going out for a brisk walk. It's really a miracle the way our bodies work, the way we can propel ourselves and we can surround ourselves with beauty as we do it. And the same goes for any form of exercise, cycling, being in a class with other people, doing aerobic exercise, doing yoga. Really, as long as we bring our attention to the present moment, I think we will feel the beauty and the miraculous nature of the way our bodies work.
Do you know, this morning when I was thinking about this conversation today, I was in the process of working out on my exercise machine. And I had my computer there, and I was scanning the internet, and I thought, no, this is not the way we do this. So I turned the machines, the digital stuff off, and just focused on the movement and the exercise. And you're absolutely right. If you put everything else aside and enjoy that movement and the exertions of your body, it has a way of changing your mind and how you're thinking too.
Yes, I think the more we practice being in the present moment, experiencing the fulfillment of what's happening right now without judgment, on purpose, the more we will enjoy what we're doing, whatever it is, whether it's taking a bite of food and really maybe once in a while, once a day, take that bite of food, close your eyes, chew really slowly until you can really appreciate all the subtle flavors that are in that bite and maybe even appreciate the miracle of how that food got to your plate and be grateful for the entire process and the privilege of enjoying this food that somebody planted and watered and fed and harvested and got to, you know, your grocery store and so on. Be grateful and be intentional about enjoying the fullness of, you know, each taste of each bite. Now, we can't do that all the time. And sometimes we're exercising and, you know, we have an exercise bike. Maybe we have a flat screen TV in the exercise room. You know, you want to watch a movie or you want to watch a sporting event or your favorite, you know, series. And that's fine, too. You know, there are lots of different ways to do things. But I think whenever we draw our attention to what's happening in this moment, we tend to be, you know, more grateful. We tend to enjoy whatever the activity is even more.
You seem to be suggesting, Doctor, that we focus on infusing spirituality in just about most everything we do, or at least finding a way to infuse spirituality in what we do.
Yes, I mean, you can call it spirituality. I don't want to turn people off. It's a sectarian endeavor. Mm-hmm. And mindfulness is something that many people are aware of. Not as many people practice on a regular basis. And one of my true heroes, Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's really the father of the mindfulness practice that many people do, define mindfulness as experiencing the present moment on purpose, non-judgmentally. And if that is a spiritual endeavor, I mean, to me it is, but it's not a religious
right.
exercise.
What do you mean by non-judgmentally?
Well, you know, the end in gain is non-judgment. And the fact is, Michael, that we are, the way our minds work, we're always observing things in our environment, including other people and ourselves.
Looking
and
for the saber-toothed tiger, right?
Well, we're making judgments. So we're always comparing things. And we tend to, because of our negativity bias, do so in sort of a negative way in many cases. So we see another person and we'll draw comparison, often unfavorable to ourselves or the other person. For example, you know, he's taller and better looking than I am. I feel bad. Or I'm smarter than she is. I feel good. And we make these judgments all the time. And in fact, they're generally rather fruitless. And they take up a lot of mindful energy, but they don't really give us back anything positive. And so if we can become aware that we don't have to label everything as good or bad or better or worse, and just try experiencing things as they are. Because when we compare things, we're interjecting our bias. So we have this overlay of, you know, a tinted way of looking at the world. And we often see things as other than what they truly are. So in other words, we don't have to say that's a good thing or that's a bad thing. It's just the thing. And when we do that, I think we tend to appreciate things even more and we experience things to a greater depth than when we immediately categorize them and reduce them to, you know, fitting in a certain box.
You're also giving yourself a lot of freedom then too.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think if we can be non-judgmental of others, and perhaps the most difficult thing is being non-judgmental about ourselves. So when I do my gain meditation and I've gone through connecting to the breath, going through my gratitude, going through acceptance, going through intention, pronouncing my three good things to myself, intending to be more present and positive, I go to the end, which is non-judgment. What I see, Michael, with during my meditation is I see one of these beautiful NASA images of the Earth suspended in space. And what occurs to me as I contemplate that is that this planet is neither good nor bad. I don't think about the things that might be bad going on the surface or the things that might be good, but just getting the broader view, the Earth is neither good nor bad. And then I think it's only logical to consider myself, and I am neither good nor bad. I am simply the person that I am, just as the Earth is simply the planet that it is. And then I apply the same non-judgment to myself, and it's liberating. Mm-hmm. Because we are neither good nor bad. We are fallible. We are joyful. We're a lot of things. But the net of that doesn't have to be good or bad. He is not a bad person. She is not a good person. They are people. They are to be experienced as they are. And when we drop the judgments, I think we see things with a clarity that is really spectacular.
Well, doctor, let's suppose that you have a patient who is severely burned out and would benefit greatly by engaging in some exercises, but refuses to do so. How would you go about getting them up off their butt, onto their feet, and into some motion?
That's a great question, Michael. I think that nothing happens without intention. So our natural state might just be to sit on our butts. But if we want to better ourselves, if we want to enjoy our physicality, then we have to focus on our sleep, focus on our diet, and focus on our exercise. And I would simply, discuss the benefits of exercise and emphasize that there's no failure. That just getting up and walking around the block once is a wonderful start. And I would counsel my patient about the benefits of movement and, of course, the health benefits of even what might be considered very mild exercise, with the intention to do it on a daily basis and to grow it, because then the benefits multiply. So, the intention has to come from the individual person. And there are some people that just, they're not going to get with the program.
Yeah.
But I think I would emphasize the benefits of exercise, even just walking around the block, and the fact that baby steps and repetition are the way we learn and rewire our brains, and what the benefits of that rewiring process are. And they are significant.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Hammer, we've been in this COVID pandemic situation for darn near 3 years. And I don't know if it's going to ever get any better. We seem to be going through this variant and that variant, and they come and go and whatnot. Do you think it will be possible for us to reset how we see the world and overcome this burnout and become the happy-go-lucky Americans that we were at one time?
I absolutely do. I think that, there's a silver lining to everything that's going on in the world right now. And just as I think some people who were more or less forced to work from home, found that there were benefits to that. There may have been inconveniences and things that they were missing as well, but there's a silver lining to just about everything if we open our hearts and we learn from it. And I think the pandemic, among other things, has taught me and others to be really grateful for all of the positive elements in our lives. And that may seem sort of paradoxical, but think of the pandemic of 1917, for example, what was called
the big one. Yeah.
Yeah, with the Spanish flu, the great influenza. Actually, many, many more people perished in that pandemic than this one. And let's think of all the benefits we have in our society, in medicine and otherwise, that have really caused us to go through this without even more death and destruction. And let's be grateful for the
there
vaccine.
It is. That's the word I was looking for. Gratitude. If we can all just start with an attitude of gratitude, maybe we can break out of this burnout. Dr. Greg Hammer, thank you so much for joining us today. He is a Stanford professor of medicine and the author of Gain Without Pain. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's been my pleasure.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.